Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Louisiana. I'm Stephanie Regal in today for Jim Engster, and we have a great show this morning. In the studio with us, first up is Charles Landry, foremost real estate expert and attorney in Baton Rouge in the area of real estate and property law. Charles is a partner with Fishman Haygood and has really been the legal mastermind behind several key real estate deals in Baton Rouge over the past several years, the Shaw Center for the Arts, the IBM complex, the Water Campus, and he's also been very involved in the annexation of properties into Baton Rouge as the St. Georgian Corporation effort has been underway several years ago, and then again more recently with the vote, of course, in October. Charles, thanks for being here with us this morning.
Great to be here, Stephanie.
So, several years ago, or I would say a couple of years ago, you helped property owners annex into Baton Rouge. That was after the first failed incorporation effort. And then more recently, after the vote in October, you've helped several other property owners begin the annexation process. Where are we? And tell us a little bit about how it works.
Well, actually, there have been three waves of annexation. The first one occurred during the first go round of trying to get the signatures, where a number of very principal property owners, the Mall of Louisiana, Our Lady of the Lake, Baton Rouge General, and many others, elected at that time to have absolute certainty, irrespective of whether they got the signatures or not, and they went ahead and annexed. And hundreds of acres of LSU actually came into the city at that time.
And the casino also?
The casino, absolutely. Right. And then after the failed attempt, there were a number of other businesses that recognized that it would be very likely that they would come back, and they annexed their property, and that was the marketplace at Segan, mm-hmm. And a number of properties in that area. And since the vote, primarily in the voting districts that voted against the incorporation of St. George, there really have been three types of property owners that have contacted me, and I presume many, many other lawyers, to annex in the city. The first and the easiest are businesses. It's easy for, in my case, I'm the managing partner of an office building in United Plaza, and my partners wanted to be part of the city, so it was merely as simple as my doing a two-page petition, signing it, and filing it for the annexation process. You have individual property owners who are doing that now. Again, it's simple because it takes very few people to agree to annex the property. The third wave is what is being organized now, and that is neighborhood subdivisions that take much more effort to get them annexed, because at a minimum, it needs 50% of the lot owners plus one lot. Okay. To annex a neighborhood in. And what makes it complicated, and I think your listeners need to understand, is to do it really well. In Louisiana, we have community property. Mm-hmm. So you can't just get the husband typically to sign for that lot. The husband and the wife both need to sign. Let's say, sadly, one of the spouses has died, and the children have an interest in the property, with the surviving spouse having the right to live there until death or remarriage. You have to get all the children to sign.
Wow.
So what takes a little time, and you have to be very careful, is on each lot, you have to make sure that all of the ownership has signed. Now, that's fair because, as you recall, Stephanie, when they evaluated the voters, every voter was mm-hmm. verified that he or she lived within the area of St. George and was a qualified voter. So what is happening now is the quid pro quo of that. you have to be very careful that the proper ownership, complete ownership signs for each of the lots.
Are we seeing subdivisions, for instance, where some of the property owners are for it and some are against, where you're really going to have a jack-o'-lantern sort of effect and all sorts of weird boundaries drawn, or how does that work?
Very, very interesting that you brought that up, because I'm working on two different scenarios. The primary scenario that you're seeing now is that under state law, if you had Siegel subdivision that have there's 100 lots, if 51 lot owners sign a petition for annexation, the entire subdivision comes in, not just the 51 lots.
So the entire one, wow.
The entire subdivision comes
in. Okay.
And so it's the reverse now of the argument where those 51 people likely voted against it, that they're, you know, complaining that, wait a second, I voted against being in St. George, yet I'm being forced to be in St. George. Mm-hmm. Now you have the reverse. Those 51 lot owners are saying, I want my entire subdivision in, and it could be, not likely, but just to make the illustration more dramatic, mm-hmm. let's say it was exactly 51 wow. lot owners that wanted to be out and 49 that wanted to be in, then the 51 can require the entire subdivision, including the 49 that didn't want to be, that actually wanted to be in St. George, now to be part of the annexation into the city. That really is not happening.
There's not a ground battle at the grassroots level.
No, and it's usually a very large percent that voted to against St. George. There's an interesting graphic that shows what I call the lip around the core area of St. George, Shenandoah, Old Jefferson. And there's a whole lip around that area that was in the geographic limits of what was or they're trying to make St. George. Those folks generally voted against it.
Hmm.
And so what I'm hearing from are those people who are on the edge of the city, that it's very easy for them to annex, and they're electing to do so. So going back to the subdivisions, what I'm seeing is where there was a 70% vote against St. George, those are the subdivisions that are marshaling their efforts to get enough signatures that the entire subdivision will come in. Now, the jack-o'-lantern concept that you mentioned, that's happening too, where you have, say, a subdivision that part of the subdivision is contiguous to the city.
Mm-hmm.
Well, every lot owner that is contiguous to the city can make his or her choice.
They can do their own thing.
They can do their own thing.
Okay.
So that is no different than someone who has 50 acres contiguous to the city. But then mm-hmm. you're going to have, you know, the situation and complexity of this lot's in and that lot's out. I don't have much of that. Actually, I only have two neighborhoods that are looking at it like that. But again, it's what's happening is contiguous lots in the neighborhood are joining together to annex into the city.
So what does the law require in terms of time frame, timeline? What kind
It's actually an accelerated process, and rarely does it happen exactly as the law prescribes. And let me take a step back. There are two different ways to be annexed.
Okay.
You can come under our plan of government, which is really quite simple. You file an annexation petition. It literally is two paragraphs.
Mm-hmm.
You have a certification that you are in a certain area and that you're the owner of the property. And that's it. If you come under the state legislation for annexation, it's a little more difficult. Hmm. Not much, but it is. Because it requires that you attach not only the description of your property, which you have to do for the annexation or a plan of government, But there are two things that make it a little bit more complicated. You have to have a description, a legal description, of the city limits of Baton Rouge as they exist on the date that you file your annexation. I have gotten Stantec, a prominent engineering firm, to do that, and that's about an 8-page document.
Wow.
And that document will change as people annex their property.
I want to pause you right there, Charles, and we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to continue the discussion about the annexation process into the city of Baton Rouge. We'll be right back.
Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial.
Talk Louisiana with Jim Engster. I'm Stephanie Regal sitting in today for Jim, and we're visiting with real estate attorney Charles Landry talking about the annexation process underway in Baton Rouge. Charles represents several property owners and perhaps more that we're not even aware of who have begun to petition the city for annexation in the wake of the St. George incorporation vote earlier this fall. And Charles, you were explaining about sort of the mechanics of the law and how to go through it. And there are two different ways properties can apply for annexation.
That's correct.
And why are there two?
Well, we have our own plan of government. And so when you have a city with its own plan of government, and there are a few, you can prescribe in your plan of government how you want to handle annexation and also, importantly, incorporation. So let's take the annexation piece first. It's very simple under our plan of government. You have your property description. You file this two-paragraph petition, you have two certifications, you're done. Under state law, you have to have a legal description of the existing city of Baton Rouge, which is very complicated, but we've had that done for ease for anybody that wants to use the state process. And then the second piece that makes it a little bit more complicated is that you have to have the property description of your property incorporated into the city description so that the city will know after your property's annexed, this will be the new city limits. So it takes typically an engineering firm, as I mentioned, Stantec has done that. So the question could be, well, why don't you just take the green slope instead of the black slope? And the answer is simple. The organizers of St. George have alleged that our plan of government, which prescribes a limit of only four cities, that their ability to incorporate comes under the state incorporation statute, which exists, and that the state incorporation statute, in effect, primes our plan of government. I disagree with that. Our plan of government was voted on by the people, and coincidentally, when Central, the last city, joined as a independent city in the parish, although it had gotten a First Circuit case that was, for the most part, unopposed by the city, because at that time there really wasn't much of an objection to Central becoming a city. I think it was maybe 8,000 to 10,000 people, and it was functioning as a city at that time. They went back and amended the plan of government, and they got it where instead of three cities, Baker, Baton Rouge, and Zachary, they added Central.
Four, yeah.
Interesting. So now the St. George organizers are saying they don't have to go through that effort. Well, I want to be careful, and so I'm adhering to both mechanisms or methodologies for annexation so that if I came under the plan of government, if their argument is right that the plan of government doesn't control incorporation, well, it might not control annexation. I disagree with them strongly. So I do know I can incorporate, I can annex under the state statute. So I'm going through a little extra trouble and making sure I'm doing it under both.
And so all of the annexation petitions you have filed would comply with both,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. It takes a little longer. Although we were the first to file a proper annexation, it's taking a little longer for a lot of other people to file because they're electing to go under the state statute, too, for certainty.
Mm-hmm. And I guess this battle will come down ultimately to the Metro Council, which typically approves annexation requests because they want property owners that want to be in their city. But do you foresee a political battle as this gets a little further down the road? And
it's hard to say. And you're correct. In the history of our Metro Council, they have never deprived a company or an individual for annexation. And for that matter, you know, the chief spokesman for the organizers for St. George properly acknowledged that we're in a period of time that there are people who may elect not to wish to be in St. George and that they have the right to annex into the city. They typically follow that comment with, I don't understand why they want to pay more taxes coming into the city, but the truth is that if they stay in St. George, the uncertainty, or in my mind, the certainty of paying far more taxes in the long run, that's the primary reason that people are electing to go ahead now and before there's any rush to or need for a rush to go ahead and annex in the city. And, you know, what do they get? Okay, they get the certainty of an administration. They get a mayor they know. They get a Metro Council that they know. They get a planning commission that they have typically worked with, respect, and want to continue to work with. They have Department of Public Works. All of these resources that the city of Baton Rouge has been providing in the unincorporated area continue.
So it's the certainty.
It's absolutely
people have said, why didn't they do this before? Why didn't they request annexation before the vote? They were not allowed to, is that correct?
No. Well, there was a period of time once the petition had been certified, but that really wasn't the reason. The reason is there's a modest cost of going through this trouble. Mm-hmm. And if the vote had not been successful, they would have gotten what they wanted, certainty. And many of them knew that if the vote was successful, that there'd be a period of time that they could then annex. So I think the people who are annexing now did exactly what they should have done. Why do anything until you know that the vote was successful? And, you know, there was a long time that it was going to be a flip of a coin. And I think the fact that 2,000 people have made a decision for essentially 650,000 people or whatever the population mm-hmm. of East Baton Rouge Parish shows you just how thin the margin is. So now what you have are people that are saying, look, I still have time. Until this litigation is over, I could wait. But the only thing that's holding them back is the CATS tax. It's the, you know, public transportation mm-hmm. tax. And the vast majority of the people I've spoken to, I voted for. You know, I want public transportation. Yeah. So they are paying a modest amount, a few hundred dollars in the case of a $350,000 home, but they're going to get the certainty of everything that they have now. If they don't pay now the $300-$400 for CATS tax and they wait too long, mm-hmm. then they have the uncertainty of who the mayor, who the city police, how they're going to provide that, DPW, Planning Commission, and on and on and on. And I'm sure it's going to be great people that will be selected initially by the governor in the primary roles and then elected. And nobody's really saying I'm worried about bad people in those roles. They just don't know who those people are.
Right.
They know with precision exactly who those people are as it relates to the city of Baton Rouge.
And you mentioned a few minutes ago the argument that the taxes will be higher if they annex into the city of Baton Rouge. I think that references to the millage rates in the city of Baton Rouge, which are truthfully higher than in the St. George proposed area, but only marginally so. I mean, it's very, very small amount. So technically they are correct, but the argument really is a little bit fallacious because it's not a...
Well, I think the interesting argument is that they are not going to raise tax. And I think if you look at those words, the city of St. George will not have to raise tax. We have two other places. We got to fill $50 million that the parish is going to have to raise tax, and then the school board that they establish one day will have to raise tax. So others will raise tax, maybe not the city.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see, and this will be playing out in the weeks and months to come. Charles Landry, thank you so much for being here with us today, and we'll be following the annexation battles as they play out in East Baton Rouge Parish. Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Welcome back to Talk Louisiana with Jim Engster. I'm Stephanie Regal in today for Jim. And joining us in the second half of the show today is Dr. John Kerwin. Dr. Kerwin is executive director of the Pennington Biomedical Research Center. He came here in 2017 from the famed Cleveland Clinic. In the 2 years since, he's started a transformation of Pennington from the world-class research institution that it is into a world-class treatment facility in the areas of diabetes and obesity. And along the way, Dr. Kerwin, besides being an administrator, has been doing his own research on ways to reverse type 2 diabetes, which is such a health problem around the country and particularly here in Louisiana, where we have some of the highest diabetes and obesity rates in the world. But, I mean, this is really one of the most exciting things to happen at Pennington in a long, long time. And so thanks for being here today to tell us about it.
Thank you, Stephanie.
And you know, we did a story on you in the Business Report recently, and I was visiting with your wife, and she said, you know, I get the impression that people here in Baton Rouge don't realize what they have here in Pennington. You know, they drive by every day, and they don't realize what a world-class facility it really is and the reputation that it has outside of Louisiana. And that was one of the things that attracted you to the position here when you came a couple of years ago.
That is so true. And, Pennington is indeed it's a research center. It's a biomedical powerhouse in its own right. It is well known globally as a center that conducts cutting-edge obesity, diabetes, chronic disease research. So in a way, you know, it's not that surprising to me that locally it may not be that well known. It's not something that's marketed. Mm-hmm. So we're not on billboards everywhere saying we do this or that, although that could and should change. I think that there is an opportunity for us to really convey the messages that we have been generating and the findings that we have from our studies to convey that out to the public, because there is a key message in the research that's conducted at Pennington that relates to treating obesity, treating diabetes, and treating chronic diseases. And I think that that could be an important part of the way we represent ourselves, not just in the scientific fields where we do very well, but I think locally and within the state.
What are some of the challenges that Pennington has faced over the years? I mean, a few years ago, I know it was sort of on the brink of almost not being able to sustain itself financially, part of state budget cuts at a time when federal grants were decreasing. Why has it taken so long to get here? Or was this always sort of the trajectory it was going to be on as it evolved towards becoming what we're now building it into?
Well, Pennington is 30 years old, and so that's not that long in the lifespan of institutions like this, where you have major research centers in academic centers that have been around for 100, 150 years. In the context of trajectory, I think that, you know, if you think about it in terms of the seeds were planted in 1980. Mm-hmm. The crops are growing, right? And that and the time to reap the harvest is about now, actually. And so the trajectory has been upset a little bit by a perfect storm, I guess, around 2008, where you had a combination of things happening. You had an economic depression in the country. You had cutbacks in the state budget, and you had cutbacks at NIH. So our economic model is really, it's like a three-legged stool. We have support from the state. We have support primarily, our major support, 65% or more of our budget is self-generated from NIH grants and federal grants, DOD. And so in that period around 2008 or so, there was a cutback at NIH. And because of the economic depression, the other leg of our stool is philanthropy, and people started to be a little bit more conservative with their money and started looking at how they were distributing that money. So we got hit on three fronts. So essentially the perfect storm, it slowed things down, but we have persevered, come through that, and I think we're at a point right now where we're in a growth phase again, and there's tremendous opportunity. Pennington has always had a reputation as a place of excellence, and now we have the opportunity to demonstrate that in a couple of new fronts. So we have been able to establish a diabetes clinic and a new bariatric surgery program and a new cancer program. And so these are all areas that tie really well to the core mission of Pennington as it was established in the 80s by the first director, Dr. George Bray. And so we're carrying on that at this stage. I think we're ready to move into a new phase. We recently received accreditation from the Board of Supervisors at LSU, from the state, to expand the mission out beyond pure research to accommodate these new programs, which will require some element of patient involvement. So we're looking more now at treatment.
So this is huge. I mean, this is really a major transformation from just being a research facility to being a treatment facility, a place like the Cleveland Clinic where people are going to come for treatment for severe obesity and diabetes issues.
Correct, yes. And I think and the best example of that is perhaps our new bariatric surgery program, where we were very fortunate, I guess, to be able to recruit the top bariatric surgeon in the world, Phil Schauer. And Phil comes with a great reputation, of course, but he's also an individual who has established new programs in Pittsburgh and subsequently in Cleveland. These are programs where people come and are referred from all over the country, indeed globally, to him as a specialist in this surgical procedure.
In this procedure, we used to call it gastric bypass or gastric sleeve. Now they call it bariatric surgery?
Oh, well, the term that's used now is metabolic surgery.
Okay.
And that change has come about because it was realized, and we were part of the team that actually established this, that bariatric surgery, which includes several different types of surgery, correct. Roux-en-Y was one of them, the bypass, the sleeve gastrectomy is another, the lap band, which a lot of people have had, which turned out to be not as successful as some of these other procedures. But the key observation was that right after the surgery, there was this almost immediate remission of diabetes in patients who had the surgery and had type 2 diabetes.
Even before they lost weight?
Before they lost weight.
That's
so this is within
amazing,
days
right?
of the surgery. And so patients were coming in on diabetes medications, some on insulin, many on insulin. And they were, after the surgery, their blood sugars were in such good control that the physicians were taking them off their medications. And so the question is, of course, how does that happen? It is a metabolic event. And so that has led to the push to change the name from bariatric surgery to metabolic surgery, especially in the context of diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's not just a procedure that is inducing weight loss, it's a procedure that can actually have some, we don't like using the term cure, but it does have a remission of type 2 diabetes. And that is sustained for apparently for a long time. We need to follow that. And that's one of the big studies that we are involved with at Pennington. It's a multi-center study involving the Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston, the University of Pittsburgh, and the University of Washington in the Cleveland Clinic. And these are centers that have performed these randomized control trials. The randomized control trial is the standard, the gold standard for demonstrating that an effect, a metabolic effect or the effect of a drug, for example, is not due to chance, that it's due to the actual intervention itself. So people get randomized to a control condition. They get randomized to either surgery, in this case, or in many cases, it's to drugs. And that way you can assess whether or not the effect that you're seeing is not due to chance, but is due to the actual intervention. So there are very few of these randomized trials in medicine today for bariatric surgery. And it turns out that we had one of the biggest in Cleveland. We were able to bring that trial and the follow-up of those patients to Pennington, and we're conducting that over the next 5 years with a federal grant.
And then having the treatment center here now, and the surgeries will be performed at Our Lady of the Lake through a partnership agreement that was announced recently. This will create a synergy, right? I mean, between having some of the most complex cases in the world and the research you all are doing, and that the whole relationship between the surgery and the remission of diabetes. And
right. So there's several things happening there. So one of them is the surgery itself. And Louisiana happens to be a state that has a very high prevalence of obesity and diabetes. And so there is really a great need in the state to have more treatments, and this turns out to be one of the treatments for obesity and for diabetes. And so we have an opportunity to establish that. This is a program that is a partnership with Our Lady of the Lake, and so Pennington will conduct all of the outpatient procedures, so the pre-op visits and the post-op visits will happen at Pennington, and then the surgery will take place at Our Lady of the Lake. So it's a really nice partnership there between two institutions. It's also, I think, an important relationship in terms of growing out the Baton Rouge Health District. So we have this conglomerate of hospitals and a big research center located in close proximity to each other, and it provides the opportunity really to identify a defined area of excellence in the city. This has been done in many other cities around the country effectively.
And it's interesting, you know, will this help us become the next Cleveland, like the Cleveland Clinic? Welcome back to Talk Louisiana with Jim Angster. I'm Stephanie Regal, in today for Jim. And we're visiting with Dr. John Kerwin, Executive Director of the Pennington Biomedical Research Center. And before the break, we were talking about the potential that this new bariatric treatment center at Pennington has to really sort of elevate the profile of Baton Rouge and the health district that is out your way over at Pennington, the Essen Bluebonnet corridor where the hospitals are located, and really create a world-class treatment center that people identify, a brand, like when people think about MD Anderson or Sloan Kettering or the Cleveland Clinic. Mm-hmm. Will people think about Pennington here in 10 years in that same sort of vein when it comes to, again, the specialty area of diabetes and obesity and metabolic medicine?
Well, that is our hope, and one of the endeavors that we're engaged in right now is actually rebranding Pennington and redefining the story. Mm-hmm. And the intent there is to create a message that really resonates with people in terms of what we do, and one of the flagships for that will be this bariatric surgery program. This is a program that will, I think, have international standing and status. It is being led by a surgeon who has already established himself as a leader in the field. Patients are referred to him from all over the world. And he, in turn, goes to areas of the world where there is a high prevalence of obesity and where they can actually afford to have a surgeon come in from the U.S. To perform the surgeries. So he and his program bring with it an identity that I think will elevate our institution, mm-hmm. Pennington, but also I think it will have the additive effect of raising and elevating the profile of Baton Rouge itself and the Baton Rouge Health District as a location for medical interventions and care.
And I think the thing that's so interesting about this field, I mean, Dr. Schauer is bringing 50 researchers with him. When you came, you brought your own people, 10 or so, or maybe more. Justin Brown coming from Harvard recently. I mean, this is the way it works in
right.
the industry, that you get one big rock star and he brings a whole staff of really qualified research people with him and their grant money, which is not insignificant.
That is true. I moved here 2 years ago, brought 12 people from Cleveland and a research portfolio of about $10 million. The Schauer's recruitment comes with a similar type of package in terms of building the program. And I think that in one sense, the return on investment from this particular, from the bariatric surgery perspective could be substantial. We estimate it could be as much as $100 million over 5 years.
That's huge.
It is.
Really big.
It is. It represents an element of increased medical tourism to Louisiana, so where you have patients flying in from all over the country and from all over the world to have this procedure done. In many instances, those folks are coming from the Middle East. We've had that experience in Cleveland. And in many cases, they bring a very large entourage with them, large families and support. It does have a fairly substantial economic impact. There's a funny story of the Sheikh count in Cleveland Clinic, and
really,
and these Sheikhs would come in, and they would drive through the Sheikh, but their representative would drive through the neighboring areas around Cleveland. They would identify a house that they liked. There's stories of them going in, knocking on the door, and offering way above market value in cash for your house. And they would stay there for anything from 3 to 6 months, depending on the procedures that were under that their sheikh was undergoing.
Wow!
And
so a whole nother economic development aspect of this that we were not even aware of.
It's very different.
Potentially.
Yes.
So this surgery, though, I mean, how scalable is this? There are a lot of people that don't have chic money that need it. So Pennington is working on other types of treatments, maybe as you come to better understand, for instance, what causes type 2 diabetes to be reversed or in remission.
Absolutely. So scalability is important here. And so we don't have enough surgeons in the world to cure diabetes with, mm-hmm. with surgery. And so the question arises, you know, what other approaches do we have? And Pennington is famous for its work around lifestyle intervention in terms of reducing obesity. But on the diabetes question, I think that there is potential for scalability there. So if we could identify the mechanism whereby the surgery is having this effect on remission of diabetes, that is potentially a druggable target. And it gives the opportunity to develop a medication that could replace the surgery in terms of the diabetes. And so now we have an opportunity to reverse diabetes with an approach that is really endogenous to the system itself. So it's something that's produced within the body. It has a more natural property. One of the big challenges in pharma and in the drug industry is that we develop these compounds and they tend to be either rejected by the body or they tend to have short-term effects, and then the effects wear off. We have an opportunity, I think, here with this diabetes approach to identify something that would be, A, scalable, B, cost-effective, and very, very effective in terms of remission.
When do the treatments start with the new Metabolic and Bariatric Treatment Center? Dr. Shower's here?
Dr. Shower started November 1st, and he is in process of getting his licenses approved. That is no trivial matter in the state. We expect that by January, we'll start to see some activity. He's hiring his staff, bringing staff in. I would imagine the first quarter is a reasonable start time in terms of getting things moving. The first patients, I would imagine, for Dr. Shower, you wouldn't see that until the second quarter, probably, of 2020. And then the idea is to scale that up. Keep in mind, there is a bariatric surgery program active at the Lake currently. And so we would be looking at enhancing that, expanding that out, adding surgeons.
To ultimately maybe 1,000 patients a year?
The big programs are performing around 1,000 surgeries a year. You have to think about this in two ways. One is volume, and the other is the level of difficulty associated with the surgery. So clearly, very large patients represent greater risk in terms of surgery. It requires a greater level of expertise and technique, and I think that is what Dr. Shower brings. So it gives us the opportunity not only to do more surgeries, but to do some of the more difficult cases. And that, I think, is what separates the Pennington Lake Bariatric Center from anything else in the country.
Mm-hmm. And y'all have to do build out at Pennington to get the facility ready for the pre-op and the post-op, or it's pretty much there?
We do. We have a building that needs to be it's a shell, some shell space that needs to be filled in. We have to renovate. I think we will have all of that done within 6 to 8 months. In the meantime, we have an ability to accommodate in our inpatient, outpatient units the initial flow of patients. Certainly, we wouldn't be able to accommodate if we had a bolus of 1,000 patients coming through. We wouldn't be able to accommodate that. But I think as we build over the next year or so, we'll be able to accommodate that. And then in about 6 to 9 months, I think we'll have the next phase of this, where we will open a facility at Pennington that's specific to the bariatric surgery program. And so we'll certainly let people know about that when the time is right. And then the idea would be to continue to build that program. That's one of several programs that we...
Because there are other things mm-hmm. going on at Pennington, too, that are no less exciting, just maybe not as...
Right. Yeah. I think that among those is our new diabetes clinic, and this is a model clinic that we're developing, which we think will provide us with the basis for a cost-effective way to treat type 2 diabetes for patients who don't have surgery, who are on medications, and who need lifestyle approaches. This is a weight-centric approach to reversing or treating diabetes. And our initial build of this program is catered to Medicaid patients, who are really the patients who need a lot of support, and where the burden is very high, both in terms of cost and in terms of health.
It's just exciting to see sort of the pieces come together, you know, from so many different aspects after so many years. But it sounds like it's all really coming together. Well, there are so many exciting stories coming out of Pennington. And, you know, it's exciting to see finally, after so many years, the pieces all coming together. Dr. John Kerwin, thank you so much for being here today and telling us about it. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. I'm Stephanie Regal. Jim Angster will be back later this week.
Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial.